Good morning. It's 18th March. Our New Testament reading today is Luke chapter 9. I'm going to read to you once again from Brother Melva Perkis' book, A Life of Jesus. This section deals with the events after the Transfiguration. I read, "When the morning rays of the sun turned to gold the tops of Hermon, it was, in truth, the dawning of another day for Jesus and his three disciples. As they made their way down to the plains where men lived and toiled, there can be little doubt that, like Moses before them, they wist not that their faces shone. The three apostles had been shown something which even their master could not have taught them. Now, in the cool, sunlit air, they would be conscious of the peace which always follows communion with God. As soon as they reached the foot of the mount, they would reveal to their fellow disciples something of the wonder they had seen. They would tell them that there was no longer need for concern, whatever may befall. Jesus was the Son of God, and they had seen his glory. Yet this was not to be. Tell the vision to no man, until the Son of Man be risen again from the dead. This revelation was for them alone." An experience like that cannot be shared. No words could begin to convey what God's glory had revealed. This remains true today. If in God's grace there come moments when Christ enters into our hearts, and we feel the strength of his presence and the power of his love, we are conscious that we have had one experience which we cannot share. There may be times when deep calls unto deep, and on some moorland tor, or in the flickering light of a winter fire, we unexpectedly find ourselves confiding in a kindred soul. These are rare and joyous hours. But such experiences can never be related with the intention of demonstrating the power and beauty of Christ in the human heart. Each one yearns for the hour of visitation and waits in hope and prayer. And one day he comes. And like Peter, James and John, we find ourselves reluctant to leave the mountain heights and descend to the plains below. It was not surprising that the thoughts of the three disciples should be occupied by the things they had witnessed. The scribes had taught that Elijah would be revealed before the coming of the day of the Lord. They wondered how this might be, and what part the vision had in the course of events. "Master," they said, "why say the scribes that Elijah must first come?" Jesus did not hesitate to confirm the accuracy of the scribes' interpretation of the message of Malachi. He told them that it was true, that before the final manifestation of the Messiah, Elijah would be sent to restore all things and prepare for the establishment of the kingdom. Yet, as is so often seen in God's dealings with man, there was also a sense in which Elijah had appeared already in the person of John the Baptist, and the nation had done to him whatsoever it listed. The scribes had not the complete picture of the two Elijahs and the two advents of the Messiah. Jesus brings that out in a counter question recorded by Mark. "How is it written of the Son of Man that he must suffer many things and be set at naught?" If John's work saw the complete fulfilment of the preparation for the Messiah and his kingdom, where is the place of Christ's suffering? And suffer he did for us, that we might share his glory. Thanks be to God. Thank you for listening.